Hey friends, welcome back to the Work Your Wealth podcast, the show where we're teaching you how to make smarter choices with your money. I'm your host, Mary Beth Storjahan, certified financial planner and founder of Workable Wealth. Today on the show, I am very, very excited to have Scott Frank as a guest. Scott Frank is a CFP and the founder of Stone Steps Financial. He is somebody that I've mentioned briefly. I think I've mentioned him a few times on this show, as I've alluded to the life planning that I did earlier this year as we were making some of the transitions with my company into Abacus. And when I mentioned that a friend of mine took me through life planning, that friend happens to be Scott. So Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks for being here. Scott and I were just talking offline about his bio, and he gave me a quick one sentence. So would you like to give us your bio quickly, Scott?
Yeah, my bio is I'm Scott. I'm the founder of Stone Steps Financial, and I help clients align their money with life.
Love it. So Scott's here today because I know I've mentioned life planning. I've spoken about it in social media and different areas, and I wanted to dig in more to what that actually looks like, what it means, how it resonates, and how it impacts your life. And knowing that Scott took me through it, and he'll actually tell you what we did right. And I know we didn't actually do the full correct process because Brian didn't go through it at the time with me. So we'll talk through that today as well. But yeah. My goal is to educate listeners a little bit more on the questions we should be asking ourselves that aren't necessarily numbers based, right? Because when it comes down to it, you gave me a lot of insight and just feedback and gave me, but you helped me to kind of get clear on where priorities were.
Absolutely.
So let's start. Let's talk about life planning, what that means, what kind of training you've gone through, just to educate listeners on what they should be looking for in somebody who's able to do life planning with them in a financial planner.
Yeah. So the planning that I went through was through, there's a gentleman named George Kinder, who was a financial planner first and stumbled onto many of the issues that I think we as planners run into, where a client will come in and you'll create this perfect plan for them based on everything that you know they should be doing, based on all the expertise that you have, and you hand it to them and they don't do it. And I used to think that they were bad clients. And what I realized was I was not being the ideal planner because we hadn't really gotten to the core of what matters most to them. And so through George's training, we do what's called financial life planning, which is really taking a few meetings on the front end to focus on what matters most in life to the client. And if it's a couple, we want to know the answers of both of the partners in the couple, because if one of you has a fulfilled life and the other doesn't, that's not going to lead to a happy, healthy marriage. So we really want to understand what does an amazing life look like to Mary Beth and what does an amazing life look like to Brian before we look at what we should do with your money. So that's the first level.
And having those conversations, just in your experience as well, how receptive are clients? We know each other pretty well, and that's a pretty intimate conversation to begin with. And so when we're starting off relationships that way of like, hey, let's just get down to it and find out what's most important to you. I think a lot of people aren't clear. So do you start with, we're going to help you discover that? Or do people come in, no, I know what's important to me and I can list it out to you?
Yeah. So the process we go through the Kinder training, the word is actually called EVOKE. So, and that stands for exploration, vision, obstacles, knowledge, execution. And the first meeting of exploration is really a time for, like, if Mary Beth, if you and Brian were going to be clients and you were going to come sit down for the first time, I would come in with a beginner's mindset. And I would let you know that everything you share with me is confidential, pretty straightforward for a financial planner. But then from there, I would just simply say, we view money as a tool for you to live a great life. And before we can tell you what to do with your money, we want to start getting a better understanding of what's essential to you. So with that, what brings you here today? And is there anything urgent? And when we have that conversation, I'm playing a game with myself where I'm pretending that you and Brian each have 10 marbles in your pocket. And my goal that day is just to create a safe space for you guys to be heard and for you to bring out all your marbles, and no one's going to judge you on any of them. And
I feel like my marbles are already all out, by the way.
You may have lost your marbles.
Yes.
So, I do too. But Mary Beth and I are very, very close friends, so we can joke with each other about losing our marbles. But the reason that we do that is, like, Mary Beth, if you guys came in And you tell me the third thing is that you own a financial planning firm. And then I start geeking out with you on like, oh, hey, let's talk about that. Well, that basically just told you that the first two things that you told me I wasn't interested in, and then therefore everything you give me after I might not be interested in either. And the point is to let you go deep on what matters most to you. And in that first conversation, oftentimes people will end up bringing up things that they don't think about very often. And sometimes the spouse will turn to them and go, I didn't know that about you. And that's amazing. I love it when that happens because it really means that people are getting to the core of what matters most to them and they're starting to figure it out. And once they do that, then we can invite them to do some inspirational exercises to prioritize their own marbles and figure out what matters most to them. And then we can also go look at their life from a time perspective, because there's four things in life you can invest in my opinion. And it's a hat tip to Carl Richards for putting this out a long time ago. It's time, money, energy, and talent, right? Those are really the four things that you have to put to work every day. And so the key question when we work with clients is how do we optimize your time, money, energy, and talent for you to live the best life that you can possibly live?
Love it. So with the shift in your practice towards life planning, what are you finding that clients are experiencing? Are they executing on things? Are they finding more clarity? Are they feeling more fulfilled? Is there less anxiety? What kind of changes are you seeing take place in their lives?
Yeah, it's all of the above. And just to go back to the concept of what we're doing, just think about what you, when you normally walk in to see a planner, normally you walk in and you think like, they're here, you're here, I'm showing up for you to help me with my money. Right? That's normally the way we think of it. But at the end of the day, money is just a tool. And if we focus on the tool and we don't focus on why we're using the tool and what type of a tool should we have and what should we be doing with it, we can use academic research and we can use all of the industry research on how to optimize things based on what like a rational human being should do. But that's not necessarily what someone needs in their life, right? So if you think of it that way and just think money is one circle of a Venn diagram and your life as you're living it now is another circle, well, most of us are operating on a subconscious level where we're just going through life, going through the motions, doing our thing. And we never take a moment to think, how would I build this optimally? I don't know if you ever listen to country music, Mary Beth, do you? We never actually talked about that before.
Yes. Okay.
So Tim McGraw has a song that I think really describes the way life planning works really well. It's called Live Like You're Dying, right? Mm-hmm. Where he says, I wish you could live like you're dying. And that's really what this process is all about. It's taking a step to focus for a moment on what's truly most important to you. And part of the three questions gets to that. But once you have that and you know what you want, the changes that you see in people are pretty amazing and they go pretty quick and people are willing to follow through more. So it is all the above.
So before I jump into the questions, and I'll share again how they impacted me from answering them and then also speaking them out, are you finding, especially a lot of my listeners are women. And so are you finding in terms of couples showing up, are men just as willing to go through this process? Are women, are they equally as willing? Are women more into it? Or are you finding any resistance sometimes when you have prospects, not to actually clients, but when you're talking to prospects, because this is your required process somebody has to go through.
Yeah.
Have you found any gender differences?
No. I've had one client where I'm being serious. Like most of the men are more than happy to go through it, as are the women. When you step back and you think about when I give it to you as our job is to understand what's essential to you so that we can help have a lens to make all of your financial decisions through. That's not just about technical knowledge that I have, but it's about the life that you're aiming for. Who doesn't want that?
Right.
Right. There are a few people who don't want that, who just see no value in it. And that's okay. They don't become my client. Right. But pretty much everyone even the person who I can think of who pushed back the most, who didn't really know what he was getting into, his wife knew what she was getting into. And he came in to do this. And in one moment he was like, what is this, couples therapy? And we don't do therapy here. We're not looking backward and helping them solve their life problems. We're always looking forward on what they want to build. But from our conversations, knowing what's important to him, they have time and money to go be outdoors with their kids while their kids are growing up, because that's really valuable to him. And it's built into his plan, right? So, you know, it's even the people who come to it, maybe not fully open to it, still get something out of it from what I'm seeing.
Love it. Okay, so tell us about the questions and the process. I know I was given the questions ahead of time, had to show up, send them over to you and have them done. Walk through those questions for us.
Yeah, so I call them Kinder's three questions. So hat tip to George, he's the one who created it. But the concept is, and if it's a couple doing this, you each answer the question separately and you don't talk about your answers ahead of time. That's intentional. If one partner in a relationship is more outspoken than the other, I would never want the one who's not outspoken to go, yeah, what they want.
Right. Ditto's not allowed.
I'll just take that. It's like, no. Like, because you guys are going to have a lot of overlap, but there's going to be things that really matter to you that may not matter to your spouse. And the key is for each of you to understand that of one another. And I want to understand that of both of you. So when we're building out your plan, we can accommodate as many things as possible for the two of you. Right. So the questions that you answer are, the first question is, you wake up in the morning, Mary Beth, and you check your bank accounts and you have more money than you're going to need for your wants and needs now and in the future. You're financially free. How would you live your life? Would you change anything? And just let yourself go. Don't hold back on your dreams. Describe a life that is complete and richly yours.
And that's just the first one.
Yeah, it's so fun. The whole point of that is just let go of all inhibition. If you ever thought you couldn't have something because of scarcity or something like that, just let it go. Because oftentimes we end up limiting ourselves and what we can do in our lives. It's our subconscious. It's the way we grew up. It's the way we think. It's what we do working in our background. And so it's all about letting that go. Just don't worry about it. Describe everything that you would do if you didn't have to worry in the world. So that's one. Two, it gets a little tougher. So now you're going to go visit your doctor, Mary Beth, and sadly, they're going to give you tough news. They're going to let you know you have 5 to 10 years to live. I'm really sorry. You have a terminal illness and you won't ever feel sick, but you'll have no notice of the final moment of your death. What will you do in the time you have remaining? Will you change your life and how will you do it? And you and Brian in this question would have the time, money, energy, and talent that you possess sitting in my office right now. We don't get unlimited funds for this question.
And do you find that do people resist these questions at all? Like get super uncomfortable? Especially when we're talking about limited time.
Sometimes they'll get uncomfortable. Yeah. That's really the whole point, right? Oftentimes we think like, oh, I'll get to that in the future. It's really important to me, but I have to go do this other thing. And it really gives you a moment to go, hold on. If you really had 5 to 10 years left to live, what would you actually be doing? What matters most to you? Let's get down to what's really at your heart's core. What's really making you work here? Because those are the things we should be focusing more of our time, energy, and talent on. Right? And people who really push back probably don't become clients, right? They're just like, oh, no, this isn't for me. And I'm like, cool. If it's not for you, we're not going to work together. Not a problem. The third question, I make it even harder for you, Mary Beth, that you're going to go to your doctor, but they're going to shock you with the news that you have 24 hours to live. And it's not, what are you going to do in the last 24 hours? Because we can all think of really cool things to do in our last day, say our goodbyes, things like that. But it's notice the feeling that arise as you confront your mortality. And then ask yourself, what did you miss? Who did you not get to be? And what did you not get to do?
Yeah. And those were the three questions I answered that prompted me to make the move.
Yes. Yes. The point of it is, like, if you answer these openly and authentically, it will help you have clarity on what matters most to you in life. And if we know what matters most to you in life, we can start looking at your money, your time, and your energy to see, and your talent, to see how we can optimize those things for you to get to have the things that matter to you most as quickly as possible.
Speaking from somebody who went through the process, and I use a mixture of these questions with some clients as well, but going through this process formally with Scott, journaling out my answers was one emotional undertaking and jotting down my thoughts and kind of getting things out of my head. But then the meeting with you, it was really interesting as well. I mean, just the listening skills. You went in full advisor mode for me, which I really appreciated as well. There was no friend dynamic, even knowing that we're pretty close. Even when I got a little uncomfortable and kind of would joke, you redirected the conversation and went right back. I thought that added a whole other layer to it. There was one self-discovery of just jotting things down and kind of getting it out. And I was like, okay, well, here's what I think. And then the way that you were framing questions. So speak a little bit about that. So that's one part, right? So that's my work as a client. And then you as the advisor, what's your role and how are you helping to navigate me? And when I can speak to what it's like to be in that client seat.
So here's the thing about, like, when you write something down, you think it in your frontal cortex, right? In your level two brain. Don't quote if whoever the psychologist or someone will tell me I said it wrong.
Get some feedback afterwards.
Yeah, you basically have, we all have like a reptilian brain, which is where our listening goes through and we feel emotions. So when people ask us how we feel about something, they usually don't say, what do you think about this? Right? They usually say, what do you feel? And it's because we feel things all the time when we hear things. And so what happens is when you write something down, you're thinking it. When I say your words back to you, you feel them. And it's honestly, the only thing I can equate it to for simplicity is you cannot tickle yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like you can't do it. You can't tickle yourself. But if I take your own words and I give them back to you, you can feel them. And you can't do that to yourself. So the advisor's role there is really to, we have trust and empathy already. And it's really to be in that moment with you and let you go through the process of discovering what really matters most to you. That's what's happening there. And then from at the end of that, the vision meeting is kind of what we're describing right now. At the end of it, we're going to paint a picture for you, a moment in the future where these things that matter most to you are happening. And we're going to paint that for you so that you can feel them. I want to have it drawn for you so that you want to jump out of bed in the morning. Because if we get you there, then we're going to go look in the next meeting at the obstacles that stand in the way of you getting there. And what do we need to deal with to make that happen? Right. But first, we're going to focus on let's figure out where you want to head. Does that make sense?
Yep, totally.
Okay.
So it's really interesting going through it for myself. So example, just talking through, will you change your life if you have all the money? And if you have limited time, what will you do? And the actions that you could take now. And one of the things that I've come back to over and over again since we did this exercise, I think it was back in February, and something I've been working on myself as well from being an entrepreneur and trying to quote unquote balance it all as a mom, what little changes and feeling like, oh, I'd spend more time with the kids, or if I missed anything, I'd miss time with the kids. And where would I spend my time educating women around their finances and having those conversations? The things I've come back to again and again are, one of the things I think we talked about was, okay, if I missed time with the kids, like what would I have wanted to do if something did happen to me? And we discussed like writing letters to them. Like what's stopping me from doing that now, for example, like writing letters to them in the exact moment of, you know, they're 5 or they're 16 or whatever. And like, that's super emotional for me, but that is not money. Money is not involved in that at all, no. Which is really interesting though, you know, because we tell ourselves like, oh, if only. And that's not true. So one of the exercises and things I've done is I've actually started making notes on my phone when the kids do something cute, or if, you know, I feel compelled or moved, I've started to write them little notes on my phone that, and I have email addresses for them as well that I'll email over to them. And so just like little small changes, or, you know, if the kid's like, oh, mommy, can you play with me? It's, you know, not saying no, not right now, saying yes, mom can play with you for 10 minutes. Just doing little small changes like that and tweaks to my day that are bringing joy and helping me to live more aligned that I would not necessarily have considered without really jotting it down. Because when it came down to it, it was like, I'll miss time with my family, my immediate family. That was basically like, it all narrowed down. And making the decisions, for example, for me through this merger was, you know, it was a lot of ego based in the practice that I had built and knowing that I was the face of it all. And so understanding that my ego was keeping me in it versus also like, what are my higher goals and how can I have the impact and what's going to allow me to do that? And so that was where this process was really shifting for me in that prioritization. It's one thing to flush it out on paper, but then having that sounding board of, well, is it really about money or is it about these other things? Like you said, time, energy, talent. What about those areas as well? And I think those get overlooked when we focus just on the money.
Absolutely. And money should, in my opinion, money is just a tool to give, to free up our energy, our time, and our talent to do the things that we love most, right? Because like you're a mother, you're a wife, you're a chief marketing officer, you're a friend, you are so many things and you need time to be those things, right? And so it shouldn't just all be about money, in my opinion. And it's interesting, I'm love that you've done that work since then, because we didn't even go through the whole process. Because from that meeting that I'd already described, the next meeting is obstacles, which is really coming back to the torch that you've lit. You know, we call it lighting the torch, giving you the vision of what you want, and then simply asking what could get in the way. What stands between you and this life that you want, so that you can look at those little iterative steps you can take to bring it more into your life, right? Which you're already doing, which I love to hear. And then I'll also have clients do, there's another exercise we'll do called Ideal Day, Week, and Year, looking at it from a standpoint of if you could have the ideal day, what would your day look like? And an ideal week, not on vacation, but an ideal week in San Diego. And then what would an ideal year look like? And how far away from that are you now? And what's the next step you can take to get there? Right? And you start doing that. One of our meetings now is an annual financial life renewal meeting, where we really just come in and look at, where are you guys at? How much progress have we made? What are the next steps? Because obstacles keep coming up. We don't necessarily just nail them down and deal with them the first time, right? We're human.
Right.
But we have to come back and look at it. If we look at ourselves on a continuum of like, our job as human beings is to just keep doing a little bit better for ourselves, whatever, in whatever calling we have for ourselves, whether it's being a mom or a CMO or a wife or a friend or whatever that is, like if you can keep making those little steps ahead, where you're going to be 10 years from now, you won't even recognize yourself.
So are there themes in what you're seeing clients come back to with how would you change your life? Where would you spend your time? Are there underlying themes that are recurring across the board for people? Or is it really just vary by personality?
It does vary, but they do come down into a few core themes. Family and time with family is a pretty core theme. Or even, and it can reflect itself through experience, right? So people want to travel more with their family while the kids are growing up to have those experiences with them. A sense of place can be a very important thing to a lot of people. Sometimes that's having a home that feels like their home, where they can have all their friends and family over and it's their sanctuary. And then sometimes it's having another place that's not their home, that's out in the woods or out in the country, where they can get away and escape things. Spirituality is a pretty big common theme, where people want to have, whether you identify as Christian or Jewish or even just you're an atheist, it doesn't matter what you like. Some form of spirituality comes back through, fairly common. And then relationships, but it doesn't necessarily have to be with family, but it could be with rekindling relationships with long lost friends or things like that. Really, sense of community, I think, is what that gets back to pretty commonly. Mm. Those are the big one. Oh, legacy is another big one. So a lot of people have a calling in life and they at some point realize it's not about the money, it's about the impact. And so all of a sudden they'll shift mm-hmm. from, I don't care about making X number of dollars in the corporate world. I want to go work, take this talent that I have and go work in the nonprofit sector or go work in government or do something else because they feel it will lead to a, you know, help them leave a legacy that they otherwise won't leave if they're working inside a corporation or something like that.
Which is so funny that all of this work leads to so much clarity.
Yeah.
And it's really going back to the thing that we talk to clients about, using your money as a tool to provide some of those things. And sometimes money is just not even involved. And it's really the story that we're telling ourselves. So unpacking a lot of that, I think, through this is really interesting in forward projections. And none of that was tied to a dollar amount, a sense of community, a sense of place, a legacy. Those are all over the long term and bring a sense of fulfillment. And it's so interesting to me that, you know, nobody's talking about that necessarily, where people are usually asking, like, do I have enough? Will I have enough? How do I measure up against somebody else or your other clients? It's really just like the stacking up of dollars, when ultimately the advisors that are doing this kind of work were over here yelling like, it doesn't matter, you know,
right.
Like, for the most part.
Well, the thing is, like, all of the money stuff still has to happen, right?
Right.
Like, they still have to have a resilient plan. They still have to make sure they'll be okay. But once they know what truly matters most to them, we can look at a lot of different ways to get them there, right? So if it's a young person working in a corporate job who wants to go become an adjunct professor and work for 501c3s, the way that we're going to plan for that person is very different than someone who loves being in a corporate job and wants to be there until they're 65.
Yes.
Right. But until we know what really matters most to them, we can't tell them what a good plan is. Right. And so that's why once I learned about this process, I went, oh, this is what real financial planning is. It's really getting to know a client so well that you know who they are, really know who they are. And actually, I'm thinking, now that I'm explaining this to you, I'm thinking about a client who wants that type of a life that I just described. And one day she called me and said, hey, I'm visiting my dad in a ski town, and I want to buy a condo to turn into a rental. And I just went, okay, you could do that. That's going to delay you launching, you know, transitioning from corporate life to living the life that you want. Do you want to talk about that further? Oh, no, I definitely don't want to do that. So because I know who she is and I know what she wants, I can be a sounding board for her, even though she's really smart and really knows what she wants. It's easy for us to get caught up in what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's really interesting in rewriting the story of I'll be happy when, and allowing yourself to be happy now. A lot of people have this mindset of like head down, do the work and retirement, or I max out my retirement account for this year. That's when I'll be happy and I can breathe. And it's making sure that we know what you want, having the plan in place for that, and then feeling a sense of ease that it's working. You're making decisions. That's the guidepost, but you have clarity on how you can live your best life presently instead of in the future.
Yeah. I think it's all about working towards contentment. And I would also say that, you know, for us, I mean, you're a little younger than I am, but for our generation, like the standard retirement that our grandparents had, it's probably not going to be the same. Right. We're going to live a lot longer. So even the concept of like trying to work towards someday when you can stop working and never have to work again, what a waste of your talent. You're probably going to do amazing things for a long time. You may not want to go work in a corporate world or do what you do, but you could probably still use your talent to help better society and help better your life and, you know, better the lives of your kids and your family and your community. So, yeah.
So one question before we transition to the wrap up, I guess two questions, actually. Have you gone through the life planning process yourself, and how has it impacted your life?
Yes. So I had to go through it as a part of the training. So, and Amanda wasn't with me to go through it, so she hasn't been through it, but you have to go through it when you get trained, because if you haven't dealt with your own stuff, your baggage comes up when other people are speaking to you. It's basically what happens. but yeah, I did do it, and the benefit that it's had for me, it's been wonderful. It really, to me, my third question was all about, and it translates back to one of your final questions, because you know, I think one of your final questions is what does being wealthy mean to you? Mm-hmm. And my third question was all about what did I not get to do? Who did I not get to be? It was all about, I didn't get to be the best version of myself as a father, as a husband, as an advisor, as a friend, right? Like I want to have the time and energy to do those things and to just always be striving for being a little bit better. I'm never going for perfection because no one can be perfect, but I know that I can figure out how to spend more time lovingly with my boys and have more moments with my wife and get to spend more time with my friends in the water surfing and be more present for my clients so that I can be their guide on their own journey. Because I do view it as they're the heroes in their story. And my job is to be their guide when it comes to what they should do with their money.
Love it. Yeah. Also, I love that you're making references to things we've talked about previously.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's transition to the wrap-up questions.
Okay.
What is the best financial advice you've ever received?
Oh, so it had to be from my grandparents who were Great Depression era people. And it was just to always save. I think their number was 20%. If you always did that, you'd be great. Yeah, so that's probably the best advice I've ever received. And I got it when I was like five, from five until.
Five?
You know, until they died. It was just, they would always save money. They never needed to worry.
Okay, so to flip that then, what's the worst money advice you've ever received?
You know, I don't know that it would be technically money advice, although I think it relates, but it was when I was going to start my firm and a few people were like, you can't start a business. And I realize now that was their fear talking, not mine, but I'm so glad I started a business. And there were bumps along the way to start it, but it's all looking forward, it's all worth it. So I'm really glad I did.
Nice. Okay. So what is your favorite money mistake you've made?
Leasing a Mercedes C300 when I moved to San Diego.
So please elaborate.
It was a great car. You know, it was like the, you know, you're young, you're making money now, and you're like, oh, I'm getting a sweet car. And then I got it and I drove it and I was like, this really doesn't add much value to my life. Like, I'm not really loving this thing. So it really started to teach me the value of money and the concept of money can be used for, it started to put me on the path to where I'm ultimately at today of looking at money as a tool.
Love it. Also, as somebody who is currently leasing a Mercedes, sometimes it does bring you joy to your life.
Yes. And if it does, that's great. And in all honesty, like that's one of the things about the work we get to do with clients, right? It's not about us. It's about them. So. Right. For some people, like, hey, if buying Birkin bags brings you joy,
yeah,
and you can afford it.
You can afford it.
Go for it, right?
Yeah.
If it doesn't, don't do it. You know, if that's someone else's thing, don't worry about it.
Exactly. I will say that the spectrum of the ways clients invest their money or spend their money and enjoy it is really interesting. And it's really fun to watch, like part of our job. It's just so fun to see clients invest their money or spend their money in certain ways that bring them joy. I have a whole spectrum of things, and it's fun. It's so educating. It's made me such a better person and advisor. I think that's one of the things of having a virtual practice too. You have clients all over the country, and
yeah,
you just exposed to so many different things.
Well, but you also get to see the biggest thing key for me with doing the financial life planning is seeing that it's not about me and about what I want. It's about them and what they want.
Oh yeah.
Right. And that's, and their idea of a great life and what they value is going to be different than our own. And I think all very often some advisors like to, you don't mean to, but you project your own stuff on people.
Mm-hmm.
And we should stop doing that.
Oh yeah. It's really about how you presented it with your client who called and just saying, okay, there's no judgment here. If you do this, it's going to delay these other things, or there's more risk involved, or you'll be locked into your job longer that you wanted to leave. Is that aligned with what you want? And then that's also really fun too, is laying out the options and letting them choose. Because I have a lot of clients this year who've been like, nope, not going to buy the house. I have clients who just emailed me this morning. Yep, buying the house. Nope. Still buying the house. I'm like, all right, whatever works
that's
for you.
It. And your job is to be their guide. It's not to tell them what to do. It's to give them the tools and the toolkit to help them go further than they would without you.
Exactly. And finally then, so what does being wealthy mean to you, even though you kind of already answered it?
Yeah. So I literally typed it out earlier before we jumped on the call, and it's having the time and energy to be the best father, husband, friend, and advisor I can be. ... surfer. I'd love to be an amazing surfer.
I feel like just being a surfer in general is cool. And my perspective, I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, but there's a kook level that you exist at for a very long time, which basically means you don't really know what you're doing. And then you start to learn how to be a good surfer. I would love
to be
a good
surfer.
I'm definitely beyond kook, but I have friends who can just rip. And I want to be like them when I grow up. Yeah.
Nice. All right, Scott, tell our listeners how they can contact you.
So easiest way to contact me would be on Twitter at Scott_R_Frank. Or at stonestepsfinancial.com.
Perfect. And I will link to that, all of the resources we mentioned. I think I have Carl Richards, George Kinder, Tim McGraw's on there.
Yeah.
So there will be an interesting list of show notes for this episode.
I can put up the three questions too, if you want. I can give them to
you.
Yeah,
if you have a download, I can link to that also.
Sure.
So thank you so much for coming on and sharing this information. I think it's super valuable.
Yeah. Have a great day.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Work Your Wealth. If you're looking for more information on how you can make smart choices with your money, head over to workablewealth.com and sign up for 9 steps to workable wealth and get free tips and action items delivered to your inbox weekly.